Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hello, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, we're tracking the big blizzard that promises to pummel the Northeast from Philly to Maine. We'll talk with Paul Goodlow from the Weather Channel. Viola Davis tells Hollywood black is indeed beautiful. We have her speech at last night's Screen Actors Guild Award. Also, what's the relationship between the civil rights movement and armed self-defense? Author Charles Cobb is here to tell you, you might be surprised. Also today on Fit Live Win, trying to get you healthy and well. How can you do a 5-minute workout while you're at work and it can improve your health? All that and more coming up right now on News One Now on TV One. All right, folks, that's the U.S. Capitol here in the nation's capital. As you see the snow going across the screen there. Well, that's a little light to compare what is going to be happening later today, not just in D.C., but in New York, in Boston, all across the Northeast, as they're bracing for a monster storm. Blizzard conditions are expected all across the East Coast. Thousands of flights have already been canceled. Schools are shutting down. It is going to be a major problem. On the phone right now, it's Paul Goodlow. He's a meteorologist with the Weather Channel. I call him Black Ice, considering he's a fraternity brother of mine as well. Paul, this is very interesting. And with this storm, winds that are going to be hurricane-like?
Right. This is a huge storm, not only because of the snow. In some areas, you could see 2, maybe even 3 feet of snow, but it's the wind as well. This storm is kind of transitioning from what we thought could be just a quick-hitting light snow to now it's redeveloping as we head throughout the day as a big nor'easter, and that storm will deepen and strengthen as it does so. We'll see gusty winds as far south as maybe Georgia, Atlanta, some gusty winds there. Not snow there, but you've already seen some light snow in D.C., but the winds will be with us basically from now right on through maybe into Wednesday. And as the storm, you know, passes by New Jersey and Philadelphia and New York City, that's where the snow really starts going. D.C. will get, you know, it'll kind of luck out, maybe 2 to 4 inches, not a big deal there, but I guess even that is big for D.C. But once you get towards Philly, you could see a half foot or more in New York City, 1 foot to 2 feet of snow there. Out towards Long Island, we're getting closer to 2, maybe 2.5 feet. And then places like Boston and Worcester and Springfield, even Hartford, Connecticut, you could see easily 2 feet of snow. And this is going to be the most snow we've seen probably in about 2 years across the area. But as you mentioned, it's the wind. It's that wind component which will turn this storm into a blizzard. So it's not just the 2 feet of snow that could fall. It could be that 4 or 5 feet of snow that could drift and block roadways and shut people into their homes, which will shut down schools for at least 2 days. I envision easily Tuesday and Wednesday not being school or work days across that Northeast corridor, as well as causing just major problems in transportation. And with our airline system these days, it's all about the hub and spoke. You know, you can't get planes to or from the Northeast, which means you have delays all across the nation. So far, just today, we're closing in on 1,900 flight cancellations. Tomorrow, we're about 1,800 flight cancellations. That's over 3,600 flights over the next 2 days here, which will not go on. And chances are, you'll see a lot of cancellations on Wednesday. So this is something that's going to shut down the Northeast, shut down people earning a living for a couple of days here. Also, shut down the kids from going to school and learning. But again, this is one of our first big storms so far this year, and it is going to be historic.
All right, then. Well, Paul, we'll certainly appreciate it, and we'll stay dry, stay warm as best we can here in D.C. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Paul Goodlow from the Weather Channel. Thanks a lot.
Sure thing.
Folks, last night, the Screen Actors Guild Award, Viola Davis, of course, stars in How to Get Away with Murder. She was honored as Best Actress, and she gave a phenomenal speech that I want to play for you and we'll talk about with our panel. So here's Viola Davis last night at the SAG Awards.
All right, when I tell my daughter stories at night, inevitably,
a few things happen. Number one, I use my imagination. I always start with life and then I build from there. And then the other thing that happens is she always says, Mommy, can you put me in the story? And you know, it starts from the top up. So I'd like to thank Paul Lee, Shonda Rhimes, Betsy Beers, Bill DeLee, and Peter Nowak for thinking that a sexualized, messy, mysterious woman could be a 49-year-old, dark-skinned, African-American woman who looks like me. Thank you to the Screen Actors Guild. Thank you to Estelle and Lisa Costello and Michael Adler, CAA, for having my back. And thank you to all the people who love me exactly how God made me. And that's my beautiful husband, Julius, my 4-year-old daughter at home, Genesis, and my mother, May Alice Davis. Thank you so much.
Certainly a powerful speech there. I want to go to our panel, Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver, transformation strategist, Rock Newman, host of The Rock Newman Show, and Shelby Emmett, attorney and consultant. I want to play that because what she had to say was critically important because we literally live in a world where when it comes to how we define beauty, America does not define it in terms of a Viola Davis. So we saw last year with Lupita winning the Oscar as well, and all the folks like, oh my God, she's so beautiful. And black folks going, we've been knowing folks like that for a long time. That ain't new to us.
Exactly. We have a type of beauty that, you're right, obviously oftentimes is not recognized by the broader world. But what she said to me that was so moving was how she mentioned that in engaging her daughter about this, raising a black girl, letting her know from the beginning that she needs to be part of the narrative, that she is beautiful. It does start at home, and that's really where we need to put our emphasis, letting our children know that they need not be defined externally by others' views.
Roland, honest to God, last night I got a text from a 56-year-old, highly successful corporate executive who is about your color, so kind of in between the light and the light-skinned and the dark-skinned. And she asked me the question, do you think that light-skinned women think they are better or prettier than dark-skinned women? And my answer was, you know what? Unfortunately, some of that ignorant thinking still exists today. It does, and we must address it in a very forthright, candid kind of manner, because it's not just those outside of our community that belittle us when we're of a darker hue. We do it ourselves, and we must stop it.
Hold tight 1 second. I go to a break. That, of course, that was the subject of Light Girls, documentary that was on OWN last week, which is a follow-up to Dark Girls. Bill Duke was involved in both. So I'm going to pick up more on this when we come back as well. Also in the show, Charles Cobb. He was one of the leaders of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He has a new book out that talks about the relationship between guns and the civil rights movement. It wasn't all about nonviolent. We'll explain. It is 8 after the hour. This is News One Now on TV One.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Back to our discussion in a moment. Leon Ford, folks, here's a headline, though. Leon Ford Jr. will not be retried on charges from a 2012 traffic stop by Pittsburgh police that left him paralyzed. Ford was pulled over by police in November 2012. Officers thought he was another man and ordered him out of the car. Ford refused. An officer climbed into his car. The car slipped into another gear, and the officer fired 5 shots, leaving Ford paralyzed. The 21-year-old was found not guilty on 2 felony counts of aggravated assault last September. The jury was hung on 5 other charges that included resisting arrest and recklessly endangering another person. Ford has filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against the city of Pittsburgh. I want to go back to our conversation here with our panel, Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver. Also, we have Rock Newman as well as Shelby Emmett. Shelby, I want to start with you. The reason I wanted to start with this is because here you have a 49-year-old sister who no doubt had to deal with the issue of color when it came to going out for casting roles, because in America, The standard of beauty has been defined as a white woman, blonde, blue-eyed, buxom, and it has been a constant breaking down of that. And when historically, when it comes to African-American women, frankly, they had your skin color, Avis, Rocks as well, maybe mine, because it was seen as, well, the closer they are to being white, that's more acceptable. And so Viola Davis is in a long line of folks like Cicely Tyson who are breaking down those sort of barriers.
Well, of course, this is an issue that's very relevant to African-American women, but I think this is an issue that's happening for women all across Hollywood and America. I don't think this is pigeonholed to just dark-skinned black women. If you're looking at just everyone in the audience there, a lot of the white women, I saw Reese Witherspoon, other actors, actresses, very emotional. A lot of them have had plastic surgery. A lot of Asian actresses have talked about this as well, trying to make themselves look more West. So I think this is a bigger conversation about where we're seeing women sexually and how we want to view them, not just an issue with black women, but I think it is very obviously more important. But like I said, I think this is something that all Hollywood actresses are dealing with, either their weight, their physical features, what have you. Everything has been defined now to a lower, different standard that I think even most men would see is sexually gratifying.
I certainly understand in terms of the lack of roles, if you will, for women across the board, the very few female directors as well. But there's something that's far more acute mm-hmm. for black women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even more so if you are a dark-skinned black woman.
Yeah.
Because I've interviewed a number of black actresses and who say, look, there's always sort of only room for one or two of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's always like, here's the one it girl. So for a period, it was Vivica Fox. And then all of a sudden, it was Tamla Jones. And then it was Gabrielle Union.
Well, Hollywood's an industry, you know, just like anything else. I think, you know, if you sell a car, people want people to look a certain part. If you're selling real estate, you don't want your real estate person to be someone that works in an apartment complex. So this is an industry like everything else. I'm not saying that there's any changes, but it's an industry.
Well, it's an industry, but the reality is, just like, I get it with cars, we also buy cars. The reality is, I mean, movies also are supposed to reflect life. And that's simply what it is. And what she is saying is, hey, I got skills.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can also be beautiful and be this dark skin.
I mean, you're sad it's a bad TV show, but.
Yeah, well, the truth is, there is a
It's a damn good television show, and the ratings bear it out, considering it's a number one drama, new drama on television.
I guess because I went to law school, it's just so over my head. It's such a.
Well, hell, that's like me saying, oh, the newsroom is not real. It is a television show.
Exactly.
It's not real life.
It's Hollywood. It's not the real world.
But it's not a bad TV show. It's a damn good show.
Back to the issue of race for a moment. This thing is so convoluted, it's got us all crazy. Because here we're talking about the denial of opportunity to dark-skinned African-American women, which is an absolute reality.
Yeah.
However, white actresses and all across this country go out and lie in the sun and corn roll their hair and do all of those things trying to be like us. This thing is really twisted and convoluted. I don't know if they'll ever figure it out.
Well, but here's the piece how I take this even further. When you deny those opportunities, what you're also denying is the ability to build and create wealth,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which then means the denial of being able to pass down wealth,
mm-hmm.
which also means being unable to be able to use your resources to help others. So when a Kevin Hart does a movie and he gets paid $3 million and he wants more money because of social media and he's called a whore,
mm-hmm.
but then he gives $50,000 to the Texas Southern University band. Well, when Kevin gets to make $3, $4, $5 million more money, Kevin can say, well, I can now do more with my money than just when I get paid here. And so this goes beyond just images.
Mm-hmm.
This also speaks to, when you look at income inequality in America,
yeah.
it goes to other fields. It goes to when we are not afforded opportunities in corporate America, in media, some of the other different areas as well. And in fact, in the corporate world, there have been these very interesting studies where in that workplace, white coworkers took directions differently from somebody who was light-skinned mm-hmm. versus somebody who was dark-skinned, yeah. that now impacts who becomes CEOs.
I think you made a good point earlier, though. This isn't just an issue of whites doing this to black people. I don't know about you as a light-skinned woman, but I've gotten most of this anti, you think you're better, you're good, or whatever, from black women. This isn't just an issue of white people looking at blacks.
No.
I think Viola Davis made a very good point here, which is what you said. Talk to your daughters.
There's a
it's a problem in our minds that we're still telling ourselves that I either look better or I look worse from somebody else because of their complexion.
Can I jump in?
That we're doing and telling our own daughters,
but I am
regardless of what Hollywood is saying or putting on film, we have an obligation to say our daughters.
Follow me here. The train of thought I'm speaking of is specific to denial of opportunity, which goes to economics.
Okay, so, but we can also create our own movies.
Stop blaming white Hollywood and let's take some ownership. You're wrong when they...
Spike Lee has tons of opportunities to not portray black people in a negative light, and he never does.
Actually, you're wrong.
Can we let the doctor talk?
No, hold on. First of all, doctor going to talk in a second, but let me correct you on something. When you say you can make your own movies, if you don't have distribution, you're dead in the water. Who controls that? So you can go out and make it. I can show you a litany of African Americans who made films, but that couldn't get distributed, that couldn't get on the various platforms, and never got seen.
Okay.
And so that's the reality.
But we have the power of the dollar, so don't go to the Hollywood movies. I'm speaking of the denial of the dollar,
and that's what I'm talking about when she says, I didn't get opportunities, Avis.
Well, let's just say colorism is real. Let me just put it out there. Colorism is real.
Sure.
There's a reason why there's a saying, light, you're right, brown, stick around, black, get back. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why that saying ever existed. The reality is that we do live in an America where people are treated differently, not only by race, but by the color of your skin. And it's not just African Americans. If you look at the Indian population, for example,
Latino,
it's the same thing.
Yeah.
One of the biggest industries in the world are skin lightening creams. There's a reason for that.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason is not just because you are accepted better socially, you have better economic outcomes. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. I've been studying what happens to people in businesses as it relates to the color of your skin. And people are treated differently when they are of a lighter hue than when they are of a darker hue. And in the entertainment industry, it's not just actors and actresses. Look at videos, for example. Mm-hmm. How long have we been seeing the idealized beauty of a black woman in the video looks nothing like Viola Davis. Not that you should aspire necessarily to be a video queen, but it's a reflection of what we consider to be beautiful in America. So there are real consequences, socially, economically, real consequences related to skin color.
Right. And look, I just want us to understand that when a lot of these issues come up, when we talk about the notion of race, even when you talk about class, for me, I'm looking at the denial of opportunities, which speaks to the inability to build and create and grow wealth, which also contributes to this notion of income inequality. And when we miss that, I get it when it comes to, well, do you like me? Do I like you? I get that. Fine. You don't have to like me. But when opportunities are denied, and then not being able to be able to generate the kind of wealth, then that creates a whole different sort of a set of issues that speaks to, in this country, it comes down to money. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we want us, I don't care what your skin tone is, be able to get that check like somebody else as well.
Hello.
All right.
It so makes me think about the Willie Lynch letter, and whether it's authentic, either he wrote it or not, it is applicable today. Absolutely. Everybody needs to study that letter.
All right, folks, I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. We come back. What the role did guns play in the Civil Rights Movement? Oh, you didn't think so? Well, my guest Charles Cobb says a huge role. 22 minutes after the hour. This is News 1 Now on TV.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Folks, we lost a legend over the weekend. Legendary baseball player, Hall of Famer Ernie Banks died Friday after suffering a heart attack. The Chicago Cubs player received the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2013 for his contributions to the country. Banks started out in the Negro Leagues. He was the first black player for the Chicago Cubs and spent his entire major league career with the team before retiring in 1971. Ernie Banks, who was known as Mr. Cub, was 83 years old. Folks, guns and the Civil Rights Movement sound like opposites. All we've heard about nonviolent movement, but the reality is guns played a critical role in African Americans defending themselves. Folks, joining me right now is Charles Cobb. He's the author of a new book, This Nonviolent Stuff Will Get You Killed, How Guns Made the Civil Rights Movement Possible. Charles also was one of the members of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, of course, that played a critical role when it comes to driving the Black Freedom Movement. So Charles, welcome to the show. Looking forward to talking with you about this. I mean, this is, as I remember years ago, watching a Showtime movie called The Deacons of Defense. Mm-hmm. Forrest Whitaker starred in the movie, and I actually later got the book, The Deacons of Defense. And they believed in being armed. And for all these years, we've been taught this whole different view. Oh, no, it was just nonviolent, turning of the cheek. There were black folks saying, y'all come this way, you're going to face some heat.
Yeah, that kept death down. As a friend of mine says, if somebody kills you, you can't be a good civil rights organizer. The fact is, most of the movement in the South took place in the rural South, where guns are part of the culture.
Yeah, where life.
Black of life. People use guns to go hunting. People use guns to keep varmints out of the garden.
And you were far away from police, so something happened.
Well, you were far away from police, but also the police were all hostile. The sheriff's departments, the police departments in these little bitty towns and counties, they were hostile. So people, the easiest way to understand all of this is just simply understand black people as human beings, and they're going to respond to terrorism or violence directed at friends, family, or community the way anybody would. So the local people in many of these communities says, look, we know y'all are nonviolent, but we're not going to let these white people kill you. And in Louisiana, they actually organized a formal group, the Deacons for Defense and Justice.
And they had chapters across...
In the South.
Yeah, in the South.
In the South, in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Martin Luther King's organization was protected by an unnamed group. But in a lot of instances, it's just farmers and people just having a... I never stayed in a house, and I stayed all over Mississippi. I was there for 5 years. Mm-hmm. I never stayed in a house that didn't have a shotgun in the corner or up above the door or a pistol on the night table. And individuals use them to drive night riders away and keep us alive.
Now, what's interesting is because the reality is white America had a whole different view when black folks started having guns. I mean, I'm talking about the images of the Black Panthers going through the state capitol,
yeah,
that iconic image of Malcolm X looking out the window, holding an assault rifle, and folks like, oh my God, what's going on? But to your point, this was a matter of survival. I mean, there were people who were literally coming to houses to kill folks,
yeah,
coming to neighborhoods, and white Klansmen were driven out because they said, y'all got guns, so do we.
Yes, and that kept those kinds of attacks down to a minimum. If you look, say, in my grandmother's time in the 1920s, you'll see they could have lynchings, they'd advertise them in the newspapers and say, y'all come, we're going to hang so-and-so. By the 1950s, and I think World War II veterans had a lot to do with this,
yep,
night riders and marauders learned that the people they were coming after were increasingly inclined to shoot back. And as much as they believed in white supremacy, they weren't prepared to die for white supremacy. And that's by the time we show up in the 1960s, that's all in the culture.
First of all, I mean, Jimmy Lee Jackson was an Army veteran. Medgar Evers was an Army veteran. I mean, and you had brothers who were coming back who were marksmen.
Yes, and they came back with weapons, and they their attitude is easy to understand. I've been over here and wherever, Japan.
Oh, I'm a shoot.
Germany,
I'm a shooter.
I'll shoot a Klansman. I mean, this is not rocket science here. These guys, and I make a very strong case in the book, I think, that you really have to understand the World War II veterans,
mm-hmm,
to understand what young guys like me and young women who were involved in the movement of the 1960s. Encountered in the people they were dealing with. Because those guys, I think, and I argue this in the book, changed the climate of the South. This is Medgar Evers. And I could name a dozen people, mm-hmm, off the top of my head, not as well known as Medgar.
Going to a break in a second, by 30 seconds. Why did you really want folks to know this? Did we have a miseducation, and were you bothered by us not understanding this element of the Black Freedom Movement?
Well, I think the Black Freedom Movement is inadequately understood top to bottom. I think...
Well, first of all, just calling the Black Freedom Movement, because other folks call it the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah.
But that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, that's a conversation we can have.
So I'm using Black Freedom Movement for a reason.
But I think it's misunderstood. So I'm a writer. I've been a writer, a journalist, all of my working life since, mm-hmm, leaving the South. And I am extremely dissatisfied with the historiography of the movement, although I think since the mid-1980s you're beginning to see,
mm-hmm,
a new historiography emerge from younger historians, mm-hmm, who are approaching the history from the bottom up as opposed to the top down. But my dissatisfaction centers on the fact that much of the struggle in the rural South is largely ignored.
Right.
many of the movement was more than Martin Luther King leading a Selma march or somebody else doing this kind of march or sit-ins. You have to dig into the rural South
right.
to understand what happened. That's why I wrote this book. And guns, being a journalist, I'll talk about guns because I know people will pay attention to that.
Absolutely, especially in America. Charles, hold tight 1 second. One of the things, folks, that I've always wanted to do was I believe in bridging the gap. For me, as born in November 1968, is what I call a post-civil rights movement baby. So up next, Charles is going to have a conversation with one of the young activists today, Ashley Yates, talking about Black freedom movement then, what's happening now. You want to look forward to this conversation. Also, folks, forget the gym. Workout at work. We'll show you how today on Fit, Live, Win. All of that coming up next on News One Now TV.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, welcome back. There are lots of young people all across America who are leading protests, organizing and mobilizing in the aftermath of the death of Mike Brown, John Crawford, Ezell Ford, Victor White III, Kendrick Johnson, take your pick. What's always interesting is when you sort of have this young, old, young folks don't know what they doing. We don't want to listen to all y'all old folks. And so one of the things that we're going to do right here on TV One is sort of bring those folks together where I want them to actually talk to each other, learn from one another, and get a sense of what's happening. So Charles Cobb, as I said earlier, he's the author of the book, This Nonviolent Stuff Will Get You Killed. He also was the field secretary for SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, one of the most important civil rights groups in our history. And also joining us right now is Ashley Yates. She's a millennial activist. She has been very involved in the various protests from Ferguson and St. Louis. She joins us from Skype from California. She's co-founder of Millennial Activists Unite. Ashley, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. So I want to start this. And first of all, I'd rather have the two of you talk to each other versus me asking various questions. And so, Charles, I know I've read some accounts, your thoughts in terms of what's happening with Ferguson and the protests. So two of y'all go ahead and have a conversation.
Well, I live in Florida, so obviously I have a conversation among the young people I talk to are the Dream Defenders in Florida, and they are very interested in what we did as young people 50 years ago in SNCC. And I say, you know, not everything is relevant, but there are three things that are important to understand, and I'll pass them on to Ashley. One is that what was really different about the 1960s, and it starts with the student sit-ins in February, is that young people emerged in leadership roles. Before the students acted in 1960, civil rights was always something grown-ups did.
Right.
Secondly, that we moved from protest, from being protesters, to being organizers. We learned how to embed ourselves in communities, how to talk to people, how to listen to people, and how to learn from people. And thirdly, that as much as the movement was about protest, it was also reflects the challenges that Black people made to each other, one another, within the Black community. Mm-hmm. And if you grasp those three things, then you grasp the substance of what we did in the 1960s.
Ashley?
Yeah, absolutely. We, especially, you know, the people that I'm really working with now, like, we've learned so much, particularly from SNCC. I think if you talk to any of us, we will definitely highlight Ella Baker as one of our role models. We really adhere to decentralized leadership. We really adhere to listening and empowering the people that have been disenfranchised. These are all skills that people are having to learn in the moment. A lot of people in this movement are first-time activists. A lot of people are also getting politicized after being radicalized by the events, particularly in August and Ferguson. So we're learning along the way. So it's a little bit of a different strategy. We're not able to sit down and have long sessions with people and have these longer trainings. People were having to do that very much on the go. And now we're having to kind of backtrack and do some of that work. But I definitely see it happening. I'm definitely involved in it myself. We're sitting down with not only our elders, but also with each other and really learning the history of the movement that came before us. No one's ignoring the movements came before us. We know that they were successful, but we're also willing to learn from their mistakes too.
What Ashley describes is exactly the process that we went through. We had to learn how to talk to people. We had to make the time to talk to people. For us, that meant leaving school to commit full time to the movement. But it was a learning process. I mean, it wasn't like we emerged full blown as skilled organizers and active. We learned it. And Ella Baker was very much at the center of that. It was Miss Baker, and she was Miss Baker to us because she was 57 years old when we met her. Miss Baker was the one who told us and taught us that A, organize from the bottom up, and that a strong people don't need strong leaders.
Ashley?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing that I take away from Miss Baker, right, especially, is empowering ordinary people to do extraordinary things and making them realize that that's really possible. And that includes self, right? A lot of people have been uplifted into positions that they never saw themselves fulfilling. You know, these are people such as myself that were, you know, working in retail, college graduates, or, you know, just working regular 9-to-5 jobs, people that were students that dropped out of school. So these are, you know, everyday folks that now have been uplifted and we're really seeing do extraordinary things. And that's a process that we're having to pass on to other people when they, you know, kind of look at us and say, well, how did you become an activist? How did you get there? And the reality is that we really don't know, but we do know that whatever is inside of us is inside each and every one of everyone else.
Again, I can only echo agreement. And the other thing to be stressed is, well, two things to be stressed is, one, none of this is easy, and none of this happens quickly. If you're going to organize, as opposed to having a protest march, you can announce Friday we're marching on the state capitol or wherever, but if you're talking about organizing at the grassroots with ordinary people for change, it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be quick.
Ashley, I want to give you the final comment.
I was actually going to ask the quick question.
Go ahead.
Use this as a learning experience. So, Mr. Cobb, what were some of the largest challenges that you incurred being a youth organizer and having to go out into the real world and organize people that, you know, necessarily weren't always politicized or weren't actually involved in the work?
We had two issues, and it took some time to overcome them as we embedded ourselves in the community. One is not so relevant today, I think, and that is we had to overcome fear. I don't think people even today understand how murderous places like Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia were. So there was real fear, and we were bringing more danger with us. So we had to struggle to overcome that fear. And secondly, people had to make a judgment about us, and that was going to take some time. And it involved really going to church with them, sitting on their front porches, eating Sunday dinner with them, living with them. And as I said earlier, it doesn't happen quickly. But we had to find a language that worked for ordinary people, worked well enough for ordinary people to decide to put their lives and their livelihoods at risk in order to make change.
Well, here's one of the things I told you this, Ashley. We're going to have more of these conversations. I'm going to bring other folks on as well and bring folks from SNCC, bring folks like Ambassador Andrew Young, because I just think it's critically important that both folks are talking to each other, learning from one another, because we can gain insight from it, and we don't have to have people saying, oh, folks are at odds with one another, because the reality is, whether you are 57 or 65 today, whether you are 21, we all fighting for the same thing, and that is to make sure all Black lives matter. So, Ashley, great seeing you, great talking with you. We'll do it again.
Thank you for having me.
Charles, thanks a bunch, man.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
Good meeting you, Ashley.
All right. I'll hook you up, trade your numbers and everything so y'all can talk. Folks, up next, Fit Live Win, trying to get you healthy, sitting at the desk. We'll break down some workouts. A 5-minute workout at the desk? Wait till we talk. We'll tell you about it. 14 after the hour, News 1 Now TV.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, hold on. I had to get my water in. All right, folks. We always talk about, you know, getting healthy and getting fit when it comes to Fit, Live, Win. And a bunch of y'all at work, and you're going, man, I ain't got time for exercise. When I get home, I got to cook. I got kids to deal with. I got a spouse. But personal trainer Gigi Nash says, look, you can work out at work using her easy 5-minute desk-er-size routine. So how you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Sorry. So what's this 5-minute routine you can do at the desk? What's the deal?
5 minutes. You know, we don't have time to work out every
day. Right. Like, we got 4 minutes and 45 seconds in this segment. So what we got?
We can get in and we can do arm curls with a. You got your water bottle already? So you can do arm curls. You can lift your arms up.
I need more water.
Yeah, you need more water. So you should be drinking about 2 of those a day, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so 2 of those a day.
Hell, I'm trying to get the 1. Okay, I got you.
And you can work your shoulders. You can actually take it over your head and work your triceps.
I don't know about this suit and everything.
Yeah, but you
get right. Get rid of that graphic. We see the water bottle curl. Y'all ain't got to put the graphics up. All right, what you got?
All right, and
folks need to see the exercise. Forget that graphic.
So some of the things that you can do. You need to get up and stand up.
All right, come on. What you doing?
Okay, you're going to stand up. You can do push-ups.
All right, a push-up.
A push-up against the
like
desk.
Like what? Come on.
Yeah, just go ahead and bring your feet out a little bit and just come in.
All right.
And press it out.
That's it?
In and press it out.
All right.
Now, if you have a desk that you can't really do that to, you can press the chair up against the desk and do it here.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, what else we got?
So, one of the other things that I understand you like to dance.
Oh, of course I like to dance.
So, one of the things that we like to do in the gym and at Mama Cita Studios is we like to drop it like it's hot.
That's easy.
Like to do that.
That's easy,
I heard
girl.
You like to do that. That's a squat.
So, I know that. I was just telling a trainer that over the weekend.
That's a
he
squat.
He kept saying, we need to do some squats. I said, you know we ain't trying to hear that. I said, but if you flip it into a dance move,
that's
I'm
right.
like, yeah, we got it.
Well, I got a move just for you. The
what
Roland
you
Martin drop it like it's hot
What's
squat.
That?
Okay, so you're gonna come in and you're gonna drop it like it's hot and you're gonna squeeze it back up and twerk it at the top.
Okay, why can't you just go straight
down? You can
down
go down and come
back
on.
Up.
Yes, you can. You
just
can do that.
That's right.
You gotta add it.
You know,
look, you can add your abs to it. Yeah, up and drop it down. Now give it a little twist so you work your abs too. You can give them ab crunches.
Okay.
Okay, drop it like it's hot.
Drop it like hot.
Come on up and twist it out. There you go.
See, you got a twist. You just like just bounce it that way.
And
but
that's
you, but
what
you
exercise.
To tighten it up.
You want
okay,
to tighten
all right.
It. You want to tighten it
so
up.
So what else you got?
So you want to stretch. Now we're up. We're stretching. Every time you get up from your desk, stretch. Because if you're sitting all day, 20, 30 minutes at a time,
right?
You need to get the circulation going.
Okay, y'all talking about the casting shadow? I know. Don't worry about it. We weren't planning this. They get all technical in the control room.
Well, but you got to stay healthy, and that's
yeah,
the whole
absolutely.
Point. So you want to reach up and stretch up, or reach back and stretch back.
Reach back.
And stretch back, yeah.
Stretch
your arms out.
Now, stretch that way.
Stretch it back, all the way back.
All right.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Work that. Work the chest muscles. Now, you're at the computer all day. That you can make that into a dance, too. There you go.
All right.
So if you're at the computer all day.
Right. And your body's all
hunched over.
Hunched over
no
like
fun.
This here.
That's not cute at all. So you want to stretch it out. Stretch your hands out.
Right.
Roll your wrists around.
What was that movie where they did this here? Was it Sparkly Fingers? What was that
yeah,
movie?
Yeah,
you
get jazz hands. Yeah,
bring it on.
Yeah,
whatever. Your jazz hands,
yeah,
whatever.
Jazz, that's, not
that's what you look like you were doing.
Okay, but you're actually working your hands. You're creating
right,
circulation.
Right, so you want to do that because that because
yes.
Okay. So if you're so let's say you're sitting at the computer all day. So mm-hmm. now your back is all tight and everything mm-hmm. like that. So mm-hmm.
gonna,
what you do to fix that?
You're gonna stand up. You're gonna stretch it out. You're gonna relax. Now the other thing is you need to walk. If you're at your desk all day, you're
right.
sending emails to your coworkers around the corner,
right.
get up and walk and go talk to them.
Or I used to do this when I was at CNN in New York. We had like 7. I would just walk. I would do my daily walk.
Just walk.
I would go to the 7th floor, the 6th floor,
that's
the 5th
right.
floor.
That's right. Use the stairs.
I go
don't use the elevator.
People, but I would just do a walk.
So make that a part of your workout. If you can do that in the morning and in the evening, every day, 4 or 5 days a week, that's going to help you keep everything fit, tight, and right.
All right, cool. So how can folks reach you?
You can reach me at GGA Nash. That's my Twitter feed. Or you can reach me on my website, which is LabFitGG. And I'm on Facebook, GG Nina Nash.
All right. Well, we appreciate the 5-minute desk-er-size.
Desk-er-size. Yes,
right.
sir.
So y'all get that right. So, you know, we can just sit here and just drop it.
That's right.
Drop it.
Now twist it out when you drop it and twerk
all
it at
right.
the top.
Back in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Yeah, I still got my water on the desk. All right, folks, Hip Hollywood reporter Ashley Williams gives us a red carpet view of last night's SAG Awards and chats with a few of your favorite stars about two big winners, Uzo Aduba and Viola Davis. Check it out.
It's one of the most anticipated award shows of the year. Peers nominating peers for their achievements in television and film. I'm Ashley Williams on the red carpet for the 2015 Screen Actors Guild Awards. One of the biggest wins of the night, Viola Davis, who won for her role on ABC's How to Get Away with Murder.
I'd like to thank Paul Lee, Shonda Rhimes, Betsy Beers, Bill DeLee, and Peter Nowak for thinking that a sexualized, messy, mysterious woman could be a 49-year-old dark-skinned African-American woman who looks like me.
Viola's, you know, she's just an amazing actress, you know, but the also wonderful thing is she doesn't strain everyone with her process. You know, she's still cool and chill and really funny on set, and that's makes it a pleasure every day, you know.
Anybody who knows Viola is not surprised in the least. I mean, she's a ridiculous actress, she's beautiful, and doing things on television that you've never seen a black woman do.
It was also a big night for Orange is the New Black's Uzo Aduba, who won for female actor in a comedy series.
I want to say a huge, massive thank to our cast, without whom, without whom this is not possible. I love you guys so desperately, so much.
I call her Uzo.
The transformation that Uzo goes through when she works, to know her personally, is to see the level of that transformation, the real depth and beauty of it.
After accepting the actor statue, Uzo went back on stage with her castmates to accept the award for outstanding performance by an ensemble in a comedy series.
I've worked on a lot of sets. I've been around a long time and never worked nothing like this that will you ever see.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine might not have won the award for performance by an ensemble in a comedy series, but the show star Terry Crews tells us he was just happy to be nominated.
I don't expect awards. Look at my career. All I got to say, all you got to do is look at an Old Spice commercial and you go, what in the world? One thing I discovered is that you just have to be earnest. Do your best every time, and somebody will notice. And this is what's so honorable, that we're noticed by our peers.
That's a wrap from the red carpet. Congratulations to all the winners. For Hip Hollywood and TV One, I'm Ashley Williams.
All right, folks, so that's the SAG Awards. Don't forget, right here on TV One on February 6th, we're going to have the NAACP Image Awards. I will be broadcasting from Los Angeles, talking to a lot of your favorite folks, and we're looking forward to that. And so that will be lots of fun, and then, of course, there'll be lots of driving like it's hot at the after party as well. And so we look forward to that. Also, this weekend, I was in Atlanta for the taping of the Trumpet Awards. A number of folks were honored, including Janelle Monáe, as well as Jamie Foxx. And so that is going to air right here on TV One on February 21st. So you don't want to miss that. Some phenomenal performances. Dave Hollister, Ruben Studdard, Mystical, also Avery Sunshine. You had Deborah Cox. I mean, it was just on and on and on. So it's a great, great show. And I love the fact that the Trumpet Awards recognizes many people we've never heard of, folks in politics, in business, in philanthropy, in law, in science, because black folks, we're more than just about entertainment and sports. Tomorrow, folks, on News One Now, more of us bringing the funk with Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach. I'm out. Holla!
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.